And we're back! No Sandman this time, just the old school Halloween entering, except it's the new old school because it's 20 years later.
I love the orchestral.
Yeah, it was very theme. Well done in this. And a nice homage. I'm a big homage guy with this series. But this is Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
We're going to gush about a lot of things in this episode.
Yeah, we're both big fans of this.
This is like a legitimately good movie.
It's like the one true sequel.
And I'm
most upset about David Gordon Green eschewing.
Yeah, true. Even though I'm kind of excited.
Sure,
just
of
picking
course.
Up for,
yeah.
from Halloween 1 because there's a lot of goodness there. However, in terms of retconning some things from Halloween 2 that really didn't work and giving us a satisfying next phase of this series, you couldn't have done better than what we're going to have here.
I mean,
this is my favorite rewatch in the series so far.
Same for me, by far. It really stands up even today in a great cast, great. Just the juice that went into it. The backstory is fascinating. But yeah, we're doing, again, this is the H2O standalone
like
episode.
Like a daily pod now.
Which we didn't plan on doing originally, except we did, and then we didn't. But we were supposed to tie this in with Halloween 2. That is not going to be the case anymore. Obviously, this is a standalone for H2O. Probably the one of the more solid sequels for the Halloween franchise.
Yes.
And that's why we wanted to give it its proper due, because if we tacked it on to the end of the Halloween 2 with how long we went on that one, we would have ended up with like a 3-hour podcast. And you
like
don't need that from us.
One of our first episodes. Of course you'll listen to that, people.
You don't need us to do that for you. So we're doing Halloween H2O in its own standalone version. H2O, ironically, no water in this one.
No water.
No.
Yeah, the title makes sense.
Yeah.
20 years
later. A little
play
on words.
H2O is water, but water's a specific thing.
It's
the basis of all life.
Right.
And yet there's no water in this movie. There's no connection to water.
A lot of blood.
Like if they fell in a bathtub and had the final fight in there, it would have made sense.
That actually would have been, it would have been.
You have LL Cool J. He's from Deep Blue Sea. You could have had a connection.
Samuel Jackson's finest performance to date. Yes. We're going to find a way to get out of here, shark. Sorry for spoiling Deep Blue Sea for you.
It's a great movie. Just watch it anyway.
So, yes, we are doing Halloween H2O. This is Mike, and Oscar, part of our MMO Does Halloween franchise series review, all in the lead up to October 19th when David Gordon Green's reboot, sequel, remake, however you want to classify it. I guess it's just a straight up sequel, but it's tough calling it that.
This series is spiraling wonderfully out of control for the both of us.
Much like the movies themselves do.
Yes.
And so with that said, we're going to do, again, probably our favorite movie in the franchise, at least thus far. Certainly one we wanted to give enough time to and be proper to. And speak in reverential tones, I imagine this episode is going to be closer to our Halloween 1 episode than our 2 or 3.
It might be a mix because there's some awesomely bad. Awesomely 90s things in here.
Also true, yes.
So we're going to enjoy this.
So let's start. Mike's going to start us off here and get to the backstory of H2O.
Cast and crew directed by Steve Miner, who is known from Warlock, Friday the 13th Part 2, which I did see, Forever Young, which I did see, and Lake Placid, which I did see and love. I love Lake Placid.
Do you think
there's
a
Fonda in there?
They gave him the job because he directed a movie called Warlock, and the Mike Myers in Halloween 2 was played by Dick Warlock?
Dick Warlock, one of the greatest stage names of horror movie stuntmen in the history of the world. This guy did Friday the 13th Part 2, which, and that was the Jason masked one?
No, Jason did not get his mask until 3.
Okay.
Wearing a burlap sack in 2, but he was the killer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the first Jason one, or the first one was Jason?
Yes, no, the first primarily Jason one, yes.
All right, Forever Young, I mean, we're used to dealing with horrifyingly evil people, and Forever Young is the Mel Gibson movie. And then we have a Lake Placid film that is just an all-time...
I don't think I've ever seen Lake Placid.
Oh, you'll like it.
It's
awesomely bad
as
well. You got Bill Pullman. Oh, you have a great cast in that movie, so see that one, you'll like
it. Similar to this one.
We have Steve Miner being able to carry a payoff in a
movie.
And those are satisfying films as far as I know. All right, written by Robert Zappia and Matt Greenberg, at least given credit. Zappia is also known from the animated series Tom and Jerry Show. He's known from the TV miniseries 5 Days to Midnight.
Not familiar with 5 Days.
5 Days to Midnight makes no sense as a general concept. You don't talk about days before midnight.
Fair.
Correct? Yeah, midnight
true.
Happens every night.
Also, it's like the don't feed the Mogwai after midnight, but it's always after midnight.
Five
so
hours.
Always be gremlins? Yes.
Five Mogwai to midnight makes sense.
five Mogwai to
five
midnight.
hours before midnight.
Five Mogwai to Midnight, I believe, is the sequel to 3:10 to Yuma.
3:10 to Yuma. Greenberg's resume includes Seventh Son, 1408, Reign of Fire, The Prophecy 2, and Children of the Corn 3.
I think he's my enemy.
You don't
those
like
are two of the worst cinematic experiences I've ever had in 1408 and Reign of Fire.
Yeah, I don't love Reign of Fire. It was okay. I like the character of Matthew McConaughey in that movie with the crazy beard and he jumps off of dragons to fight people. I like that.
I hated that movie.
Okay. 1408 has some moments that are kind of creepy, but you hated that one too?
It was awful. It was so boring to me. Yeah, I wasn't a fan. I'm sorry.
I get it. Here's the thing. I'll have a nugget on who really wrote this screenplay or who fixed it, and you're going to be very happy with that coming
good.
Up, Michael. H2O stars Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode, her
guess
third.
Guess who's back?
Yeah.
Back again.
Third of five reprisals or four reprisals.
Laurie's back.
Her character in the Witness Protection
Dying
Program.
Dying men.
Keep going.
You go ahead. I like interrupting you.
All right. So she goes by the name of Carrie Tate here. Laurie Strode. Tate is a headmistress.
Nice touch right out of the box. Why not? Go with the horror, the psychological impact. Go with the witness protection type thing. Yeah, I liked it.
Teacher, principal, headmistress at this elite boarding school in California it is, right?
I believe. I also know originally it was supposed to be an all-girls school, and okay. Josh Hartnett was supposed to be the lone boy there because of how overprotective Laurie Strode was. But
that would have been hilarious.
Yes, that would
the
have been.
The only boy is like know. The teen heartthrob
right.
of all
the
kind.
The best-looking guy in the world.
Is
yeah.
just going to get laid every hour of every day at an all-girls boarding school. Oh, my God. That would have been hysterical.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a missed opportunity.
I appreciate they didn't do it.
Adam Arkin plays Will Brennan. He is the guidance counselor / boyfriend of Carrie Tate, Laurie Strode here. He doesn't die well, I will say. Arkin, though, he does a lot of good things throughout his career. Chicago Hope, Hitch. He is the son of Alan Arkin, who we covered in our 2012 Best Supporting Actor retrospective. Had the great line, Argo, fuck yourself.
Argo, fuck yourself.
Great career from Alan Arkin.
That's my Alan Arkin impression.
Four-time Oscar nominee Michelle Williams.
Cast. What a cast.
She plays Molly in this movie. Williams just brings a lot of credibility to this cast, who does a great job.
Yeah.
Herself and the cast does a great job.
Totally
so,
agree.
She began acting in Dawson's Creek in the very same year. she'd go on to Brokeback Mountain, I'm Not There, Blue Valentine, My Week with Marilyn, Manchester by the Sea, and The Greatest Showman. She does a great job in all those movies. We also loved her performance in last year's All the Money in the World. We reviewed that one.
Without question. She was very underrated. I'm shocked she didn't get much consideration for that.
She was a standout in that movie. Josh Hartnett plays Laurie / Carrie's son, John. Hartnett would make his acting debut in this movie.
Just months before The Faculty came out, which was one of his main, he was a main character in that one. And
that's another satisfying film.
Love that movie. Yeah.
You really love it. I liked it too. Robert Rodriguez hasn't done a lot of movies that I've loved over
Same
the
here.
Years.
Same
I like
here.
His backstory. I read his books more than I like his movies
okay.
necessarily. But I enjoy that movie. No question about it. His career, Josh Hartnett, would take off with The Faculty, with O, with Black Hawk Down, 40 Days and 40 Nights in 2001 and 2 is kind of where he really plays that teen heartthrob thing to the nth degree.
He's someone that I felt like should have been bigger.
Yeah.
Like he was a leading man for a little bit there, and everything seemed to be going to break for him to be one of the big names of Hollywood. And then he just kind of, after 30 Days of Night, he did Penny, he's been doing Penny Dreadful and Showtime.
Yeah, Sin City and 30 Days of Night, those are kind of, he kind of tried to transition his career into horror movie protagonist.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't work out.
I've never really been a huge fan of his. That might just be pure jealousy. It is pure jealousy.
It's probably jealousy. I'm not crazy about him myself, but he can bring it.
He is not a bad actor.
No,
I was shocked
not at all. Not at
to
all.
Rewatch this movie, his very first, and realize he's doing a hell of a job.
Yeah, especially going toe-to-toe with Laurie Strode, but Jamie Lee Curtis.
This past year, he's in Oh, Lucy, and I really liked his performance, and I kind of like that movie. I don't love that movie, but I like that movie as well.
He's an affinity for movies with the letter O in it.
Yes, he does. Adam Han Bird plays Charlie. We all know him best from Jumanji. Michael.
Jumanji.
As young Alan, / young Robin Williams in that movie.
Okay. I didn't realize
he's young Robin Williams.
Yeah, there you go.
Alan.
I learned something today.
He's also been in the remake of Diabolique and The Ice Storm. So he's had a writing career since. He's still acting in movies. Not a lot of huge highlights in the last 20 years. He's kind of known the most as a child actor. This might be his peak.
Okay.
Jody Lynn O'Keefe.
If you came here for the Adam Han Bird filmography, you got it.
Jody Lynn O'Keefe plays Sarah. Sarah is the most 90s high school girl in the history of Friends.
I thought she was really well in this as well.
But in the history of Friends-themed Phoebe dress-ups, this is the greatest ever, right? I mean, she looks exactly like Jessica Biel / Phoebe / Stray Hair / Two Dawson's
She's
Creek.
On the record as saying she wanted to actually dye her hair blue for this, and they kind of waned her off that idea.
I miss this look. I mean, this is a nice look.
The punk renegade rocker girl look.
We grew up having crushes on girls with this
look. Oh, of course. Without question. I still have a crush on her from this movie.
So she's known recently from TV series Hit the Floor, The Vampire Diaries. Her career includes an arc on 2 1/2 Men, 34 episodes on Prison Break, 122 episodes on Nash Bridges, and she's known from the movies The Crow Salvation, Whatever It Takes, and last but not least, Michael, She's All That.
How about that? I didn't realize that.
She's like that unassuming best friend character and all those things. LL Cool J plays Ronnie. Deep Blue Sea and Any Given Sunday are my two favorite roles of his in feature films.
It's amazing how him, Ice-T, all these hip-hop, these rapper artists that turn into legitimate film and TV stars with chops.
A ton of charisma, yeah. I mean, obviously he's an MC for much of the 80s and early 90s there.
Mama said knock you out!
That's him. And yet he's also been a movie star in Deliver Us from Eva, SWAT, Woo, Charlie's Angels, and of course a lot of TV. He's been a TV star in shows like In the House, which I watched as a kid.
Did you?
And NCIS Los Angeles has been his 9-year staple.
He's been carrying a TV show for the last 9 years on CBS, which is routinely the most watched television network. And by the way, he's hosted the Grammys like a billion times.
Right.
He's always the go-to there.
So yes, LL Cool J has had an active career, illustrious career.
Bona fide Hollywood star.
Yes. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yes.
The undercard gets Joseph Gordon-Levitt for this.
Yes. That Joseph Gordon-Levitt is making his awkward transition here, Mike, from successful child actor in my brain from Angels in the Outfield and The Juror into future movie star.
From Angels in the Outfield to Ice Skate in the Temple. The Joseph Gordon-Levitt story.
JGL would, of course, go on to make Don John, 500 Days of Summer, Brick, Inception, 50-50, The Dark Knight Rises, Looper, Lincoln, The Night Before the Walk, Snowden, and Comrade Detective. Michael, do you have any that's your favorite on his filmography there?
Don John, I really like. Brick is a wild movie.
Brick is great.
His filmography is solid. He doesn't do bad movies or bad performances.
He's done character work in the Nolan movies, right? Like, it's smaller roles. Brick is probably my favorite movie of those of that group.
Looper I really like too.
I also really like Looper. Bad kid actor in that movie.
If you
though.
Think too much about Looper, you lose your
mind. Go cross-eyed.
Yeah.
Nancy Stevens comes back as Marion. She
loved
was in Halloween's 1 and 2.
And that's part of the charm of this movie too, is that it treated the series with respect. It knew where it came from and it really wanted to be a direct tie into Halloween 1.
There's reverence to that character. Just bit parts in the first two movies, and she is now the chain smoking basically shrine to Dr. Loomis inside of her house.
Love it. Yeah. Great touch.
She is the keeper of all the Loomis secrets.
Headlines, newspaper clippings, following his career.
And of the knowledge of where Laurie Strode is to this day.
And it's kind of why I am upset that this movie isn't included in the chronology of the new movie. Because the new Laurie Strode, the 2018 Laurie Strode is obsessed with Michael Myers. And we have the precedent here of Michael Myers and his killing has been the talk of this town. Everybody knows who he is, and this continuity is there where it's not unique for Laurie Strode to be obsessed with it and be suffering PTSD from what happened, because this had an impact on everybody related to the town, and it was a nice layout here to see that with the Marion character.
So I loved her inclusion in this. H2O also stars the legendary Janet Leigh, mother
amazing.
Of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Absolutely amazing.
Quite the cameo opposite her daughter. There.
Happy Halloween!
We're going to get into that. Brandon Williams, Bo Billingsley, Matt Winston, Larissa Miller, Emily Thompson, and Chris Durand. The rest of that cast, Durand plays the Michael of 20 years later.
I want to get all the Michael Myers actors that have don the mask over the years in one room and just have an interview with them, but none of them say anything.
The goofiest and yet the freaky. That's a great meta joke. I had already planned my transition joke. Charging hard
Take
ahead.
Delay.
And that was such a good joke that it brought me back. It's great. I was going to make a joke about Halloween 4's Michael Myers of being the narrow-shouldered but hugely framed guy and the weirdest. Yeah, the weirdest shape all these shapes.
Yes.
But yes, no, that's a good idea. Let's have an interview of just Michael's tilting
heads
like puppies.
Staring at one another.
As you
and they all draw their knives at the same time.
That would be hysterical. So we have Specs here,
let's
Mike.
Let's do some Specs. Halloween H2O. 20 years later is the official title. It's also directed by Steve Miner, written by Robert Zappia and Matt Greenberg, My Mortal Enemy. Stars Jamie Lee Curtis, Josh Hartnett, Michelle Williams, Adam Arkin, Janet Leigh, and LL Cool J. Also, Mike told you all this already. Relatively
it's good
short
for repetition. Yeah, to give the folks
hammer it in there, just in case you didn't know. For those of you who aren't aware, Jamie Lee Curtis is the star of these movies.
Right, now you know.
86-minute runtime, not even an hour and a half. Pretty short.
Right. I was able to rewatch this how many times? Five times.
A lot of quality.
Losing my mind. It's all your fault.
86 minutes. You're welcome. H2O premiered on August 5th, 1998. So we have transitioned. No. The first Laurie Strode movie that's not an October release.
We got a summer movie here. We also have a trendsetter or somewhere in the trend of putting a horror movie at the beginning of August. We see this a lot now.
It happens all the time. Yep, yearly.
Beginning of August is horror movie time. Rated R horror movie time in particular.
Sure, good point. The main production company and distributor is Dimension Films. We've gotten the rights to the franchise from Universal. Dimension Films also in this time period was releasing Scream movies, and they had the Wes Craven under their toes. So they had Wes Craven, Michael Myers, both of their names. Scream plays a bit part in this movie as well.
Yes, sir.
Nightfall Productions and Trankis International were other production companies also involved. Talk about a critical reception this movie did have. Metascore, 52. That's
not
low.
Not high enough.
That's low.
Not high enough. This movie is so satisfying. Come
on. Yeah, it gives you everything you want. It gives you a modern-day horror, a slasher for the 90s. It's a callback to all the early Halloween
this
movies.
This is critics nitpicking at some of the awesomely badness in the early goings. We're going to touch on it, but
sure.
It's nitpicking.
Surprised
goddammit.
At that, and surprised at the 5.7
They're
IMDb
punching
rating.
Up at a huge box office success that you'll get into in a minute.
56,000 votes, 5.7 IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes carries a 52%, 5.5 average critic score, and the audience score not better, and in fact a little worse, 49%, 2.8 average rating out of 5 on 179,000 plus votes. Come on, guy.
Come on.
What are we missing here? Is it
this
just
is
us?
Audiences don't like this movie as much as Halloween 2.
Yeah,
well, here's the thing.
Which blows my mind.
Blows my mind.
Having just done, on the heels of Halloween 2, our review, we're laughing and making jokes throughout the majority of that, and we immediately start with, like, upsetness at people who don't take this seriously.
That's a good, bad movie.
Right.
And there's good, bad elements in this film as well, but for the most part, this is just a darn good movie.
I totally agree, and maybe it's us, and maybe we're wrong, but we're not.
And as slasher films go, I mean, this is up there for me. Like, you got the Screams and Halloween, and you got this movie. And I don't love the Jason stuff. I don't know if you like any of those.
There's some highlights, but I think there's far more highlights in this franchise. And that's kind of why it's one of my favorites.
Candyman, again, all that stuff is like awesomely bad. I know you like some Freddy.
Some of it, but again, it's the same thing. Freddy becomes a parody of himself. And this, at least, why Halloween's always appealed to me is that it loses its way, sure, and we're going to talk about that in future episodes, but there's always been kind of this urging to treat it with seriousness and harken back to the 78 release and how it was so groundbreaking and cinematically important, and this is one of those attempts, and I think it's one of the best ones. It might be the best one until David Gordon Green's comes out.
Yeah, I'm in awe of what this movie accomplishes and then the reverence they pay to the rest of the series.
I'm there with you. I'm glad we both see it the same way. It's going to be a true film appreciation day, and why it is worthy of its own episode. Box office, the budget, it was made for $17 million. Not a huge budget, but certainly the biggest one at
the
time.
For Weinstein Films, this is up there.
Yeah, certainly, without question. Total, it brought in $85 million total. Huge success. Domestically, $55 million. International release brought in another $30 million. Its opening weekend hit $16 million, so it already made back almost its money on its opening weekend. Always a good sign, especially for a horror movie. From its Wednesday premiere, it had an opening week of $24 million. So
that's
if you count the entire week, we're already in the black as far as at least being over the production budget.
Yeah, this supports the fact that you should release a rated R horror movie in the beginning of August. Yeah, and that becomes a trend.
There's definitely a market for it. And this film obviously is dedicated to the memory of Donald Pleasance, the original Sam Loomis, who we covered in Halloween 1 and 2, and Will again in 4 and 5, who passed away, and 6 as a matter of fact, passed away in 1995.
All right, so some production notes here from the words of director Steve Miner, from everybody you hear give an interview about this film, from Jamie Lee Curtis's lips herself. It was clear that she drove the bus on getting this movie made.
And Jamie again, Lee Curtis. We talked about this in Halloween 2. This need, this desire people attached to this the franchise have to, like, we gotta end this. We gotta, this has to be the final one.
But it's sweet the way she talks about it, because it's like the fans talk about Halloween 1 and 2 with her on a daily basis. She's like, every single day, I will bump into somebody and I will have a talk about the Halloween series. Mm-hmm. And I felt like 20 years later, that anniversary is not only something important to all of you, but it's important to me because Halloween was my first film. So Curtis talked about that. It's like, and she got the ball rolling on this 20-year anniversary film.
It's something I touched on when we did Halloween 1. It's nice to see a star that not only recognizes where she comes from, is not ashamed of it, but actually embraces it and knows the fans that kind of she has because of her first foray into film.
And she has a sense for what's going to be a huge hit, because the Scream movie, like, why didn't the Weinsteins think of this first? She approached Dimension Films and the Weinsteins. She's like, hey, let's make this movie. And they're like, hell yeah. But why did it take her to get this movie made? And she approached Steve Miner and he's like, hell yeah. And before that, John Carpenter was in the works, and the Weinsteins, dicks that they usually were. And I read a book about them not too long ago.
Right.
And they're just every single, they're horrible people in every single way all the time. And I'm not afraid to say that. They're not just the horrible criminals that they became to be.
I think history will smile on your
John take Carpenter there. Wants to do a 3-movie deal, and they're like, why? With John Carpenter. They're playing games with John Carpenter. Like, you don't want to do a 3-movie deal with John Carpenter here? He's going to direct H2O. And Steve Miner does a nice job. There's another guy who comes in to save this movie after they screwed it up with Carpenter and Miner, but I'll get to that. So
I think we've also gotten to a point now, and maybe it wasn't 20 years later. I find it hard to believe, because I know, just living through this time in 1998, I think I was 11 years old, and I knew the fanaticism that Halloween was treated with and how many fans there were of the horror movies, but maybe they didn't think there was an established audience. I find that really hard to believe, especially now. Look at the projection for the new Halloween movie. That's not just because it's a David Gordon Green horror movie. It's because it's the Michael Myers and Laurie Strode property.
Absolutely. The cinematic universe.
So why you wouldn't want to give Carpenter 3 films to pump out
the
and make
neglect,
money for you?
The neglect right. for that universe is so dumb. And like, at least somebody, Dimension Films, picked up on it. So Curtis talks about how much she loves all the homages in this film. Of course, there are many tricks that call back to the first two Laurie Strode Halloween movies. We'll cover those when we go through the plot and whatnot. Nancy Stevens gets the opening sequence coming back in this movie after the first two films, like we said, as the Marion character. There's an homage to Steve Miner's earlier work. There's a heavy influence of Scream on this film, and that's where I'm going to get into who saved this production for real. They didn't love the first drafts of this screenplay. Kevin Williamson, writer.
Love it.
Producer of the Scream films. Has a heavy hand on these. On
that's news to me. I didn't know that, but it is viewed as it plays as a Kevin Williamson screenplay. Certainly, you could see his influence.
He's with the Weinsteins and Mustafa Akkad, the executive producer mm-hmm. of many of these Halloween films. He is an executive producer, Williamson.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Awesome.
That's how much the Weinsteins, you know, put him in their favor.
Punch it up, yeah. Cool.
At this point, after the Screams just took Dimension from this tiny little podunk little thing into the hit that
the giant
production company that it was. So Curtis talks about the conception of the story. Like I said, she drove the bus on that. They had to create a story where Michael comes back, and you know, as an audience, she has to fight him one last time. And I thought that was awesome. That's the conception of this story.
And thank God that's laid out for us in the classroom scene, as right. all plot points in every horror movie is laid out in every classroom scene.
She has to deal with her creation.
Yes.
As in the Frankenstein, Mary
the
Shelley.
The lens of Frankenstein, yeah.
Love it. The creation's coming back home for us now. We have to deal with this one final time.
If you have anything in your past that is hit on in a English class that you're currently taking, and it's a dark past, you're in a horror movie.
It's like one of my favorite things in this movie that she is now in the role of the teacher and that Michelle Williams as the student sitting in the same seat that she's
the homage.
In, the back corner seat.
Looking out the window.
Looking out the window sees Michael during her Peanuts exposition dump there that we all basically listen to in such a way, even though it's telling you exactly what's going to happen in this movie. I loved it. So those are my production nuggets. Michael, you want to read our plot synopsis
so
here? We're
going to
handle this a little bit differently. We're going to kind of go through best and worst.
Sure. So instead of doing the IMDb plot synopsis, we'll take this one straight from Wikipedia, the Wikipedia page for Halloween H2O. Set 20 years after the events of the first two movies, H2O centers on a post-traumatic Laurie Strode who has faked her own death so that she could go into hiding from her brother, Michael Myers. So we're still doing the familial relationship, and that's once again the breakoff after Halloween 1. This new 2018 Halloween will not follow that structure, but nonetheless, now working as the headmistress of a private school under the name Carrie Tate, Laurie continues to live in fear of her brother's return. Her own son, John, attends school where she teaches. Laurie's fear becomes reality when Michael shows up at the school and begins killing John's friends, and eventually, Laurie must face evil one last time, which should be in quotes, while the life of her teenage son hangs in the balance. So what about that premise? We have Michael returning after 20 years. Again, we're treating it with kind of the same respect that he had in Halloween 1, except now he's definitely defined as her brother, and she, at certain points, feels to be needs to become the hunter instead right. of the hunted.
But she's put in that underdog role, as you need to have every protagonist mm-hmm. in a story of this genre. She has post-traumatic stress. And I love that. I mean, that's reverence for the first two films. It's reverence for the scenario. You don't have a character that just yada, 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 moving on. You have a character that is still haunted.
It's one of my biggest complaints with horror movie protagonists, and it's why I, as much as I love the Scream franchise, Sidney Prescott, if she would be in that
should
world
be in a rubber
where
room.
All her loved ones keep turning into mass psychopathic killers that want to murder her, she should be institutionalized.
Yes. So I love that she also takes agency throughout that trauma. She had faked her own death to hide from her brother. She has real issues where, you know, she's with a drug addict ex-husband, right? We get that
right.
exposition drop,
which is where
with
yeah,
Josh Hartnett.
The father's not in the scene anymore.
Yeah, so her life's been a mess, a bit of a mess.
And it's, again, why I don't understand why this movie couldn't be part of the legacy of the new Halloween, because Laurie Strode has given, in an interview with Rotten Tomatoes that's on YouTube, talking about the 2018 version, Jamie Lee Curtis says Laurie Strode in this movie, talking about the 2018 ones, she's the personification of post-traumatic stress. And it's obviously
functioning alcoholic.
Yeah, it's the like, same thing that was laid out here.
And how creative do they show how she's a functioning alcoholic? Like, she slips a drink here
and
there,
great.
Where she does the thing with the Chardonnay. I'm just gonna love this so much. It's so smart in how they characterize her.
Today.
Right. It's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I thought all the stuff with her son, John, you know, where he attends at the school where she teaches, and now he's 17 at that time when she...
Which becomes so important, which becomes the biggest plot point that signifies to Laurie, oh shit, this is the year Michael does come back.
Thematically, that works so well. Yeah. It's a metaphor for dealing with the same problems as a child of a parent who passes those genes on to you. I mean, it just makes so much sense.
And
it's such a great metaphor there.
The family trait shared by Laurie and John and Laurie and Michael, it's something I'm going to highlight in my best scenes. I savor them. I could not get enough. I thought it was geniusly written. I don't know who you want to give credit to, if it's Kevin Williamson or if it's the other two that originally wrote the screenplay, but the writing in this is phenomenal to me.
And I love that you honor the fact that this is a sequel, and yet you turn it up to 11. It's almost like a Terminator 2 style. Like, this is a sequel Halloween always should have had, honestly, because you have to honor, in a sequel, you have to honor the fact that it's basically a remake of that first storyline, right? There's two ways to do a sequel. You can blow it out like Aliens did it, right?
From change Alien. Genre, yeah.
And you can like twist one big thing on its head like Terminator 2 did it. Obviously, you can go totally different, but even like The Godfather Part 2, it's basically the similar structure of The Godfather Part 1. A sequel is honoring the original.
The irony in this, of course, is that you're basically echoing Randy's character from Scream, laying out the rules of horror movies in every movie.
So there's a twist on the original, but it's also essentially a remake of that storyline, or at least that story template. Both of those things work with this sequel, and Kevin Williamson is very smart, as he will be smart with the Scream franchise.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So we're going to start with the negative because we do have so much gushingly positive to say about it.
A lot.
We're not going to go. We will end up going probably plot point by plot point, but we're not going to start that way. We're going to start with the worst scenes. Mike, what do you want to start with here?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a performance is pretty bad, even though
you didn't like it.
He's perfectly arrogant enough to the point where we want him dead.
Oh, he commits the sin, though. He's let you know
he's
the horror movie. The horror movie rules still apply.
He's a punk right from the get-go, and punks die in this universe.
I thought it was interesting that, so we're in 1998 when this movie comes out. We've established that those who challenge Mikey Myers meet their demise. But since the Scream franchise turned the whole genre around and satirized the rules, the quote-unquote rules of a horror movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's able to steal the beer and be the punky, cocky kid and live. So except he dies in the next scene.
It's crazy because usually kids who are this obnoxious are cowards at heart.
Right.
In life, never mind movies.
Right.
And yet he's very courageous. Like,
sure.
This neighbor of his is saying to him, somebody broke into my house. And he's like, no way. Let me investigate before the cops get
so
there.
So this is the opening scene. Marion comes home to realize that somebody broke into her house. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is Marion's neighbor, takes it upon himself to go investigate.
Has a hockey stick and is basically goading this person who he hears noises in the house is probably still there. And he's got a hockey stick. So this kid has some balls.
Are you talking yourself into this being a good scene now?
I'm talking. Look, it makes no sense to me because it's. He's that kind of cocky as a hockey player. He must be like a great hockey player. That's all I'm saying. He must be that sure of himself.
Sure.
And he's stealing beers.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Committing
he
the
has
sins.
Incentives to be in there, but he's committing sins. He wants to party. And I guess he must score like 15 goals a game because he has that level. He has that much.
It's a young Sidney Crosby and growing up in the outskirts of
Absolutely. Haddonfield. So I'm going to take on this, person that just broke into my neighbor's house.
Yeah.
I'm going to use this as a mild incentive to steal some of her beer.
That said, I thought he played that role. If that was written that way, I thought the acting was just fine.
Oh, he plays a jerk. Yeah. I mean, it's over the top. Let's say that.
It's a horror movie. On the coattails of Joseph Gordon-Levitt investigating the house and all the big mass murders happen, when the cops arrive at the house after Mike's done his deeds with everyone, we're not in Haddonfield anymore, so we're in a different place in Illinois. That's made clear. Is the state of Illinois they have just the worst police units in the world? Why are you letting a car leave an active crime scene from the house you're investigating?
Yeah, these fictional Illinois cops are terrible. I would agree.
Mike just takes her car, Marion's car, and just leaves as the cops are walking at the house.
They're also like
two for one here.
They're also like famous last word freaks. Michael Myers is as if in the whole next sequence, and we never see them again. But yeah, I mean, it's totally terrible. Man. All right, so I'm skipping around a bit to get these worst scenes out of the way. The false scare with the spiders and the little girl in the bathroom sequence there. That's cool.
I loved it, Mike.
I love that scene, but it's like, why would spiders happen at that moment?
Because it's a horror movie.
Right.
We need those false scares. Yes, I agree.
The spiders have just great timing.
Yeah.
dramatic irony.
Great dramatic timing.
Horrific
by those
irony. So LL Cool J letting Josh Hartnett go off campus. Why would he ever do that after he specifically states, I can't lose this job because it's on the phone with his wife or girlfriend there. It is funding his writing career, his romantic writing career. But it's also, and Laurie Strode told him, or Carrie Tate told him in a previous scene, that he will get fired if he lets her son leave campus
again.
I
also don't know what purpose it served thematically to the story, because Laurie was leaving the campus for lunch anyway. So all that stuff that happened outside the campus could have happened without, I guess it was just so we see LL Cool J's Ronnie character as like the cool security guard and we like him more. I don't know.
No, it makes no sense. Like, he's totally incompetent and deserves to die. To me, that's a sin committed.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's all it was, to have the rules play out and him.
But they just have to get Josh Hartnett off campus and two kids watching.
But
he's
for
the
what?
Cool security guard.
Yeah, right. That's exactly
They have
what,
to get the booze. They have to have another scene between Josh Hartnett and Mommy there.
Mom, could have happened. I agree. That's
poor. This whole sequence is a problem to me, even though there's some great stuff in it. Why are kids trick-or-treating at 1 o'clock in the afternoon by themselves in that little town?
They want to beat the dark.
That's a problem.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Unless this is not a Saturday. This is a weekday. She's also going back to teach kids some more later in the day.
Yeah.
And she's
getting
housing
hammered.
Chardonnay. Look, this is a no-no. You do not drink before you work with kids.
There,
we both have worked with kids, and this is a coda. It's frowned of upon. Ours. This is more than frowned upon, Michael. Like we have chances,
sure,
in our lives to have, you know, a lunch hour drink, yeah, or twosie.
Right.
We do not. We refrain every single time.
We also don't have a murderous brother that killed all our siblings and stuff in the past.
I have not crossed this line yet as an educator, whatever. You have not either.
No.
As far as I know.
No, not yet.
Because you don't drink at all.
I do not, no.
So we don't do this. And yet she is just like playing a little drinkaroo game, which is one of my best scenes as a functioning alcoholic. She's just like, I'll get into that later.
Right.
So, but this is ridiculous.
Sure. Agree.
But that's all I got for worst
really,
scenes.
Really? That's
Michael.
It?
Do you have anything else?
I do. I have two or three more little things myself, but when she reveals her backstory to her boyfriend, Brennan.
Yeah.
And it takes a minute for the seriousness of to set in. Michael Myers' story is so... It's like Ted Bundy or Charles Manson.
He thinks it's like Halloween foreplay at first.
Yeah, like...
But I get it.
Why are you not immediately disturbed and like, holy shit, this is Laurie Strode?
Because they're making out while she's telling him, so that's
her fault.
He's
sticking with his dick? Yeah.
That's her fault. He thinks... No, I'm on Arkin's kid's side here.
Okay.
Because he thinks she's screwing around foreplay. Like, they're in the throes.
Listen, if that's the foreplay that she's into, that alone is a red flag.
Well, yeah, but it's Halloween, so... Again, Halloween as an excuse is the greatest trick... From Leah Blonds, the original executive producer, because Halloween as the holiday of when all this stuff takes place explains away a lot of problems.
Right, it does. It does. That's true.
Franchise.
That's true. It does cover some plot points. Okay, that's fine. The only other thing I have is I get that we've gotten to the point 20 years later and it started in Halloween 2. It started in Halloween 1, really, but Michael's showmanship in these kills as he's progressed and it's kind of become the inspiration for the Saw franchise, true, which would come out 6 years later with the ingenuity and the kills and all that.
Derivatives abound.
That's fine. He in no way had time to kill Sarah, bring her to a meat closet or a storage closet, hang her up through the light, putting the light through her torso, then go on to chase Molly and John in the same scene. There's no way they had enough time for that.
Perhaps, but we don't know how much time has elapsed. Is this one of those fancy schmancy
cuts? No, they hear the dumb waiter.
Michael, I watched this five times.
This is my life. They hear the dumb waiter crash. And she's still alive at that point. That's what spurs them to investigate.
They have to walk afar. They have to walk a long
way. No, sir. We've established earlier in this movie.
They walk all the way back to the little nook and cranny.
We've established earlier in this movie how far that walk is in the basement to the kitchen nook. We've established that. That's been done when Molly was working working the waitress job as the dumbwaiter in there. It's not that far. The timing doesn't make sense.
I think it's far. All you got to do is shove a light through the core. This is gross.
That's all? That's it.
And hang it up, shove a light through it, and that's it.
And gutter so you could see the... Because the light was like showing through her stomach.
Right. It doesn't have to take that long. Shove a light through it, hang her up.
When you get this done, I want you to tell me how long it took you.
Ew.
Can't wait for all the horror episode coming out Wednesday.
Okay, so those are our worst scenes.
That's all we got for worst scenes. Yeah, they're relatively in the grand scheme of things, especially in comparison to Halloween 3 and Halloween 2.
Right.
Those are nitpicks essentially. They're really not. They're not indicative of the plot. They're not indicative of the relationship. They're not indicative of the screenwriting or the performances.
All right, so let's talk about best here, Michael. Right from the jump, the opening shot is a cleaver held high from the most irresponsible mother or drunk mother, we don't know, slamming it down on a pumpkin. Slamming it down. Her kids are hovering over the table next to her. Like, you don't slam a knife down with your kids in that proximity ever.
That said, I'm sure being a parent is incredibly difficult, especially a parent of young children. You probably have a lot of pent-up rage.
All right, so I guess you do. And the kids would not have recoiled in that...
It's the 90s, man. Nothing scared those kids.
They're just used to drunk mommy slamming down cleavers nearby. That freaked me the hell out. And it's funny in the first opening scene. It's awesomely bad, I would say. I love it, but it's a little disturbing.
Sure.
It sets the tone. Pumpkins are getting cleavered right from the... We got Mr. Sandman, Michael.
Yeah,
also sets
we're
the
back.
Tone. Halloween.
We're back out of Halloween 2, where Mr. Sandman made its debut, and now we're, and that's the little nods and winks that this movie has. You have Mr. Sandman, you have the Scream being played in the background, like I said, in the girls' dorm room. There's a lot of stuff tying it together. Janet Leigh is a freaking role player in this.
I'm going to love that scene, too. But 'tis the season here, because we go from, you know, mother carving a jack-o'-lantern to the Marion scene, which we enjoyed. She finally gets it as a character in this franchise. Quite a sequence with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as we gushed over, even though I had some quibbles. But this is a terrific credit sequence, because we get the Loomis speeches.
All kinds of exposure.
Exposition. Setting the tone for the franchise, never mind this movie. But
with it not being Donald Pleasence's voice, but I know he was passed away and they couldn't find an audio recording, according to the documentary, that was just clean of him saying the devil's eyes.
Right.
So
right.
I'll forgive it.
I just think it's so smart, though, because all of the newspaper clippings, all of the stuff in those files, in the shrine on the wall to Loomis that they show, it not only retcons some of the stuff that had happened, or it talks you through the storyline they're trying to amalgamize or whatever, but it's also all the information that Michael saw that gets him to Laurie Strode.
And think about this from Michael's point of view as well. We don't know. Laurie Strode faked her own death, and she's been in hiding for who knows how many years. He's been, he's a killing machine. All he knows how to do is hunt down Laurie and try to kill her. We don't know how long he's been at his wit's end. The only really connection he has is back to the 78 movies,
right,
where it started 20 years ago. And that's how he comes up with getting in Marion, finding Marion, because he figures she would have some information. You can't chase Dr. Loomis. He's been dead. So he goes to the only link he has, hoping to find something, and he does. And that's where we also see the personification, the new lens through which Michael Myers is going to be taken in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's not this psychotic killing anyone who he's in front of in this one.
He's
focused killing machine. He's only going to harm those that put obstacles in his way from completing his goal. Not unlike what Laurie does at the end, but I'll get into that later. But the girl at the truck stop, the mother-daughter, let me take your car. If you don't interrupt me taking your car, you're fine. I'm not going to hurt you. You're not my goal. But if you stop me from getting to my goal, or you try to get in my way of getting my goal, I will eliminate you. And he's done that a couple times throughout this series. He just wants to kill his lineage, which I thought was very on message for what Halloween 2 established.
Makes sense. It makes sense as a sequel. And in terms of credit sequences, this is an all-time smart one for me. Kevin Williamson, whoever came up with that minor, or the writers there. I just love it because it does the suspense 101 filmmaking for us, because we got to put the audience ahead of the protagonist, so we now know what Michael knows, the extent of which what Michael knows to get the jump on Laurie, and that's so smart.
Which is what part of what made Halloween 1 such a success, too, was that the audience was given this information that only certain characters knew, and then once that head start ran out, that's what made it so scary. We didn't know what to expect next.
And that's what happens in this film as well. Again, honoring the original plot as a sequel, honoring the genre as a sequel, and paying homage at every step through this credit sequence of everything we've loved in the franchise before that. So smart. It's important that Laurie has the PTSD. Again, something else that honors. We mentioned all that. That's one of my favorite things.
I love that decision.
The fact that you make her such an underdog and make all of her torment real through all those years, and you show that as a freaking Halloween morning, she's screaming and freaking out.
You see the mental drain this has. She sees Michael everywhere. She's figured out ways to try to cope with it and deal with it.
Dramatically, that scene between her and Josh Hartnett for the first movie he's ever done, that works really well in the kitchen. Like, he is playing this little dance with his mother.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
About
going
to Yosemite, and he's got all this baggage on her, and that he's slowly bringing through. And the kid does a great job with his performance there.
I had no qualms whatsoever about Hartnett. I thought he was really good in this movie.
All right, so, Mike, we have a bathroom scene in this movie. I'm wondering, is there a bathroom scene in other Halloween movies that I haven't seen yet?
There's like gas station stuff, but this isolated, desolate truck stop bathroom scene, I think it's its own creation, and it's actually given a callback, as we've hit on a couple times, in the trailers for the 2018 one. There's definitely a callback
there. That's the teeth.
Right.
And I know there's a zombie bathroom scene.
There is. Yeah.
All right. So maybe
gross,
that's.
But yes.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe that. I was just wondering if it's a thing.
I don't think there's gas station. There's like gas stop things, but I don't think there's ever a full fledged. Not like this scene where the little girl and the mother. And by the way, I guess this is a worse scene for me too. What is with the cars in this movie? Why does everybody have a retro car, an old school looking car? It's the 1990s, for Christ's sake.
Like everyone's Phelps driving, garage
yeah,
car.
Everyone's driving 78. Around a classic car. Like the one that Janet Leigh gets into was like a 1950 Camaro.
We're gonna love that. We're gonna love that. There's a reason for it. Anyway, I like this scene. It works in suspense. Like you fear that Michael's going to kill this daughter
totally.
And this mother, and yet he doesn't. He lets them live. So in a weird, confusing way, we kind of are on his side for a second there.
We're relieved. It recharacterizes and reclassifies his focus. He's not interested in anything but killing off his lineage.
And it's crazy because he's had 20 years to do it, and he didn't get it done by now. Someone of this focus.
Well, I mean, if it took this long to find Marion, we don't know how many people he's killed along the way trying to find any kind of way to get to Laurie Strode,
true.
Knowing she's still alive.
It's a lot of eaten dogs along the way, too. Good God. All right. I love Laurie's trick with the Chardonnay, like we said. She basically is hiding the fact that she's a functioning alcoholic. Arkin has to go to the bathroom. She's telling him, dropping the bomb of who she is in this scene.
No, not yet.
Oh, not yet. Okay. But she's basically dealing with all the bullshit. Again, it makes no sense that we're like an hour into a college Halloween party, which is at all the sexy costumes is nothing but grab ass. And that's what's happening outside at 1 o'clock
right.
in the afternoon.
Right. Lunchtime.
Between high school kids.
In downtown.
You know, that
was a
false
high school,
scare.
A high school pep rally or something. I don't know.
An early dismissal, obviously,
sure, yeah.
because it makes no sense. Anyway, we have Laurie saying, can I have another Chardonnay, please? She has a full topped off Chardonnay just about. And the waiter's like, okay. And she's like, today. And she just houses it right then and there. Boom, give me another glass. And then she drinks just enough. So
it looks like the same glass
of Chardonnay. It's genius. I buy the scene that she has with Josh Hartnett on the street there. That's like a good dramatic scene.
It's the only time I thought Hartnett was going a little overacting, but yeah, the relevance of it is extreme too.
It makes sense. It sets up there's a lot of guilt for Josh Hartnett in that scene. There's a lot of guilt for the mother. It feels like a real argument that mother and son would have based on the situation. It honors the trauma, and it harkens to it. It's like, you know, this son takes care of the mother. How many times she has those episodes.
And it forces Laurie to reevaluate things. Why, Josh Hartnett levels it with the line, it's been 20 years. Don't you think he would have shown up by now? And so at that point, she kind of takes it within herself to be like, maybe I am overreacting. Maybe I should let him go on this trip to Yosemite with the rest of the class, which she does relent to and finally does.
We know that her paranoia is justified. The rest
right.
of the movie will prove it. And yet she's feeling that very human sense to let this kid go off and do
maybe
his thing.
Maybe I am being too overprotective. Right.
Right. So it's great. And then the fact that there's all these, you know, little twists and there's all this behind their back stuff going on between the mother and her new boyfriend, between the son and his secret Halloween party. That's all great stuff.
And then right at the end of that scene, she takes him, that she drives off, and she's finally in her mind saying, maybe I am being too overprotective. Fine, I'll let him go. She drives off. And drives right by Michael Myers' car, who's there, who's already found her, stalking her, waiting for her. It was genius.
Oh, good God. So creepy. And we have Michelle Williams being brought to this Halloween party, the secret Halloween party. I just want to say, she's a great actress in this movie.
She's
like,
awesome.
How do we not recognize how good she is?
She's
just
awesome.
The expressions she is dropping throughout that scene as just being a normal high school kid, you know, smitten with this heartthrob Josh Hartnett, and the way she's performing in that, but also like her being a smart student and the scene where she has to respond to the Frankenstein thing.
And
her performance is phenomenal.
A twist in that scene, it's not the teacher that lays out the lesson, because the teacher in this movie is the protagonist that needs to be taught a lesson. So it's the student answering the question saying, it's time for Victor to face his fears. He's waited too long. This monster has killed everyone near him. He's got to stop it.
As good as the rest of this movie is, that might be my favorite scene.
It's really good.
Because you see Michael's face through the window that Michelle sees for
that
a glimpse.
Homage
right?
to Halloween 1 right
awesome.
There.
Awesome. And then you got that multiple layered callback to the first movie with Carrie slash Laurie and Michelle Williams. It's just genius. That whole scene is,
is well written, well constructed. The homage, the payoff to it, the setting up. It's getting near the end of Act One. You're setting up the big clash that's been 20 years in the making, because in the two Halloween movies prior, Laurie and Michael have kind of gone back and forth. We had Michael stalking Laurie in the first one. Right. Laurie at some point jumps out of the shadows to haunt Michael in the second one later on in the movie. But we haven't really had them square off face to face and go at it.
And it's great too, because not only is Michael really stalking Michelle Williams and the kids at this point and throughout town, like you said, but he's also stalking Laurie in her dreams, as we've seen that become a motif.
Sure.
We've seen when the boyfriend's walking from afar, we've seen traumatized Laurie envision Michael walking at her from afar. We don't know if it's real or fake. It's freaking us all out. And we have this orchestral theme music. Like, it's the Halloween theme music, but we have added horns. We have an added orchestra.
If we live in a time where people can go see Harry Potter, the orchestra version, they watch the movie and there's a live orchestra playing the soundtrack to it and the score, why can't we have an orchestra version of H2O for horror fans, damn it?
It's great. It's great, and it's right preceding the Jamie Lee Curtis bumping into her mother, her real mother, Janet Leigh.
This is the final scene before it gets dark and Halloween night begins.
It's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare. The words from Officer Brackett when Laurie bumped into him outside of Annie's house.
An homage, certainly.
Comes right back to Janet Leigh, you know, speaking to her daughter. You realize there's a lot of emotion going on there. But how about the deference for Jamie Lee Curtis in that scene? Like, she totally could have had the zinger of the line and her mother could have had something else. No, she gives her mother, like, that whole scene.
Sure.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah,
like, the mother says all the big
and the
payoffs.
Meta-ness of it, of Jamie Lee Curtis's actual mother being in front of her saying, if you'll allow me to be maternal for a second, and then delivering the meta on meta line, we've all had bad things happen to us. The trick is to concentrate on today. We've all been stalked in the shower with a psychotic killer on the outside.
Right, we've all been through this. And then, oh, happy Halloween.
Yeah.
Another just like little zinger.
Oh, it was great.
And
such a great scene.
Michael, she drives away in the car from Psycho with the license plate confirmed.
That's
with
awesome.
My research. From the telegraph.co.uk.
That's awesome.
There is a, I'll try to tweet it. There's an Easter egg for the Psycho car.
That's great.
I didn't know that.
That's phenomenal.
The same exact car they use, but it's the same make and model, the same license plate from the from the Psycho movie, the Hitchcock movie there. Now,
then I take back my remark about classic cars.
I was chatting with one of our Twitter friends, Ryan L. Terry, from RL Terry Real Review, realview.com. RL Terry
Good
Real
friend
Review.
Of ours. Very informational.
EEL, realview.com. He's a blogger. He's a screenwriting professor, number one. So he's
a
guru.
Movie nut.
He's a movie nut.
Very, very, very informational follow if you want to follow
someone. He's a kindred spirit for us. He's reviewing 31 horror movies this month. But it's cool because he's got in that blog, he's basically working his way up horror movie history. He's got Nosferatu in there.
Oh,
he's got
cool.
Frankenstein? Anyway, Nosferatu. I've been reading it. I've been following along. It's really cool. And one per day. So start following him there. Okay, so I just like dropped this little Easter egg on him.
Right.
Without missing a beat, like immediately later, he's like, oh, and yeah, by the way, did you hear the Psycho theme song?
Yeah, I saw that interaction between the two of you. Yeah, the little...
The dude just knew exactly what I was talking about. I thought I was going to drop some knowledge here. No. The fans of this movie are so knowledgeable.
Weinstein decision to do this piecemeal one movie at a time instead of getting Carpenter. Carpenter had nothing to do with this. This is one of the first Halloween movies he had nothing to do with because he was insulted at the outset when you have these fans that are just obsessed with this universe.
Yeah, so
screw Marvel, screw Star Wars. This is the cinematic universe we want.
They should have went. They had the opportunity to do it here. They didn't do it. They try to end it for all time. We'll get into it. It's very satisfying, but fans like Ryan L. Terry and
nice
of course
catch,
critics.
Good job.
Yeah, good catch. Couldn't even surprise Can't surprise Ryan Altair. Anyway, really captivating how Lori tells her boyfriend the truth in a sequence of reveals about her real identity. I thought that really works for the plot. It always does work. When you're a superhero in a superhero movie and you're and somebody finds that out, that's just always a juicy reveal, and it makes it's so satisfying for an audience member to find out that Morgan Freeman realizes who Batman is, or
right.
to find out that who smirk Marissa and that, Tomei is yeah. and Spider-Man. It's just awesome.
So we have at this point now, it's nighttime, it's Halloween night. Everybody's left except for the girls, according to Lori and Brennan's knowledge. They don't know that Josh Hartnett is still on campus.
Right.
So Lori, and we've established in a previous shot that when Lori returned to campus, we've established in a previous shot that Michael was able to weasel his way in through the gated part of campus. So he's on campus. So we right. have Lori working through her PTSD in multiple scenes. She has visions of Michael. She closes her eyes, needs to count to 10, opens them, Michael's gone. Lori is on a dark alley and she sees Michael again.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's actually him. She can't buy it. She's already talked herself out of Michael being real. Josh Hartnett, she says, I'm too overprotective. I'm letting this get to my head. I have to be rational. Closes her eyes and counts to 10, opens her eyes. Michael's still walking towards her slowly in an homage to him walking across the street, yeah. slowly walking down the hospital hallway slowly in two. Closes her eyes again, counts to 10. Michael's still walking to her slowly. Oh my God, is this actually happening? Is she going to get this confrontation right now? Closes her eyes one more time. The score's rattling up.
Yeah.
Closes her eyes, counts to 10. Brennan with the fake scare. Opens her eyes and Brennan scares the shit out of her. So Michael's on campus. Michael knows Lori's is there. Lori has not confirmed to herself that this face-to-face is real.
It's a progression of her PTSD ratcheting up on that particular day. It's also something with the audience that's a level of suspense. We know it could be really Michael at this point.
Well, we know it is because Brennan, and when Lori and Brennan talk, Brennan sees a figure, a shape walking away, and she goes, hello? And then we cut to a next scene. Freaking so that's out. Actually Michael. But
it's also setting up the one of the payoffs of the century and of movie watching. And we just
iconic so, scene.
All right, so a great tension builder in the pre-kill scene of young Alan from Jumanji. I love it when like he drops the wine.
Oh, the
opener.
Fake scares are all over this movie. You're just waiting for Michael to do something, whether it's in the road stop bathroom with the little girl, yeah. or this Charlie kid has his hand down the he's got his hand down the garbage disposal. You're waiting for Michael to come, and they actually show the shot from inside the garbage disposal of his hand figuring around the blades. So you're like, oh, he's done now.
Right,
but no, they wait for the fakeness to come out. He pulls his hand out, turns around, Michael's right there.
It's phenomenal. And it builds the tension in another way, in a creative way. And it's just so smart. Now, we don't see the kill of young Alan from Jumanji. We do see...
I really like how you keep referring to him just as that full title.
That's who he is. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Fair enough.
Sarah, 90s, the most 90s high school girl ever. You know, Phoebe clone slash Rachel slash Monica.
We've already established that the dumbwaiter is there. Of course...
A brutal kill,
Occam's
and a
dumb
kill
lady.
That hurts yeah. us because she's characterized throughout that film, and she's
or
got Chekhov's
dumb waiter. I'm sorry.
Well, she's got that goofy relationship with her boyfriend. There, we're kind of at our age when we're in high school.
Total horn dogs.
In 1998, we're in middle school. I
yep.
think both of us. You're in grammar school. I'm in middle school.
Yep.
We think she's...
I shouldn't be watching this.
We think she's really hot stuff at that point, and I didn't have female attention at that age because I could just call her hot stuff. Neither do I now. Anyway, so at this point, Michael, we have a gravitation towards her. We don't want her to die, and she gets killed in a
brutal, horrifying,
where she's begging for her life, where she, number one, she's got a ton of agency, which I love, where she's getting the hell out of there. And Michael stabs her once, then
and
she's
Michael
in the dumbwaiter.
Is on top. This is, it's such a capable antagonist, too, because Michael knows... I got you. You're dead. Stabbed you once in the leg. She gets in the dumbwaiter, goes away. He just looks up and says, all right, we'll do this on the next floor then. Comes up, dumbwaiter crashes down, breaks her leg, and she's literally trying to crawl away while he's standing over her.
She should have done more screaming. That's my one nibble or quibble.
To who? There's nobody on campus.
I know, but that would force her to, if your leg is almost ripped off, you would, I mean, I guess you could be in shock.
That's fine.
You would do more
scream
screaming.
Scream all you want. You're dead.
But you would do more screaming uncontrollably is what I would guess.
Sure. Okay.
Or she's tough as nails.
Or let's
she's heavily.
Let's just see what happens.
She's heavily drugged.
At could that be.
Point, those kids
it
are,
could be.
I don't know. Anyway.
But yes, brutal murder. It tips off John and Molly that something's wrong. They go. They find her body hanging with the light.
That whole sequence is awesome coming up, because now they freak out. They run away from Michael.
We have a chase. We had the world closing in, just like in Halloween 1 for the first hour. Michael's closing in. Is he really there? Are we just seeing visions? What's the psychological impact? Now Michael's real. He's killed our friends, and he's hunting. It's cat and mouse all over
again. The gorgeous setting that was Haddonfield, right?
Mm-hmm.
The little town, the harmless little town, becomes terrifying in Halloween 1. The beautiful setting of this boarding school is now turned into the creepiest lair of Michael Myers, the playground of Michael Myers, where he's
like
hunting
them. Like H.H. Holmes mansion with the locked doors and different hallways, yeah.
The ambiance of that little, you know, the trees, the foliage, Michael, plays so well through all the nooks and crannies of this, like, Gothic-style architecture of this place. And now we have Michael hunting Josh Hartnett and Michelle Williams through campus now. She stops in a dumb way. But she probably knows that he can only walk. He can't run. He has peg legs, double peg legs. So he can't run. He can't run. So she saw the peg legs.
Right.
Anyway, she knows that. And she's like, well, what are we going to do? All right, we're going to get into a dorm and we're going to call the police. Mm-hmm. Smart, right? Michael gets a jump on him somehow. And immediately he fights. We love it.
Yeah, right away. A capable protagonist fighting a capable antagonist. Double team. We're not running scared. We're not these terrified babysitters.
But he loses.
Yeah.
Michael stabs him
sure
in
does.
The leg. Hard. Big knife stab. Again, we've seen some big knife stabs.
Incapacitate the protagonist. Yep.
You know, Michael has more flexibility after 20 years. He didn't have a lot of flexibility. He needed to, you know, he's got peg legs.
Right.
So the wooden legs. He doesn't have a lot of flexibility with his arms either in those first two. Just shoulder. He's been, you know, catatonic for all those years in Halloween 1. So Michael has been doing his yoga and...
Well, he's got to make up for it. He's got to keep flexibility if he's not going to be running anymore. You know, he's got to do something to lose
weight. He's been doing his upper body.
Stay in shape.
Upper
yeah.
body yoga.
Right.
Some downward dogs. And here's the thing.
He's been eating downward dogs.
Michelle Williams fights him off with a freaking rock.
It's a double team.
Loved it.
Capable. You need capable protagonists to take out, especially if you're going to do this personification of evil thing, which is Michael Myers' M.O. You got to go above and beyond. You can't just run scared the whole time.
I thought.
And it's the familial trait. This whole family kicks ass. Michael Myers kicks ass. Laurie Strode kicks ass. Yeah. Her son kicks ass. He's only going to date a woman that kicks ass.
Awesome. And Michelle Williams, who we've come to love throughout this story, just for her performance alone, for her key scene in the classroom there, given the agency to fight Michael off, and it's just smart. And she's still falling apart, but again, it's somebody who's falling apart, but that's okay. I'm still going to fight. And that's such a strong metaphor.
Cat and mouse again. The injured Josh Hartnett, Michelle Williams, they get the jump on Michael. They finally fight him off. They're going to find somewhere. One more time, the homage of the locked gates thing. Somebody let us in, let us in, let us in. So they are pinned between a locked gate, which Michael has the keys to try and open, and a locked door, which they're screaming for someone to let him in.
I love that she drops the keys there.
Yeah, bunch
of fingers. I love that. It's great. And it makes sense. I mean, she's going hard here, but she does drop the keys. She is a kid. She is freaking
sure.
out. And
not faultless.
It adds another level to that scene where Michael, after he's swiping the shit, that's scary.
Coming within inches, swiping through the gate,
they're
trying to get
them. Up against the wall, then he realizes, oh, I got
here are the keys.
Keys.
Yep.
Bam. And that's
leads to one of the most iconic images of the entire 40-year franchise.
Arkin and Lee Curtis get the kids inside, and then that little, what do
there's
you call
a
that?
Small
moon
window.
Door,
yeah,
right?
There's a small circular window on the door. Jamie Lee Curtis hears the banging, runs, grabs her son and his girlfriend, gets him inside, closes the door just in time as Michael approaches the door.
Face to face.
And we have locked eyes for the first time in 20 years.
Inches away over his shoulder view,
over her shoulder view,
her gaze at him. His reaction shot to her.
It's just a shame that horror movies can't be real cinema, you know? It's just a damn shame.
It's as good as I've seen. In,
awesome.
As good of a moment as I've seen in any movie we've reviewed in the last couple of months.
So good.
Just delicious.
Takes a moment. They both are kind of like shocked because he doesn't reach for the handle and she doesn't reach for her gun right away. They're like, holy shit, this is happening. So then she reaches for a gun and he's gone.
Awesome. They go upstairs. They realize, of course, the curtains are blowing into the room.
Oh, my God.
What a great callback.
My heart is smiling right now.
And Arkin stops her, and he's like, what the hell do we do? Who is that, number one? That's my brother. oh shit, you just told me all this stuff. What do we do? And she just goes, try to live.
What a line.
Great line.
What a line.
So economical. What do we do? Try to live.
You don't know what death is.
It should have had
an
echo.
One of those one-liners, yep.
Great. She gets the kids to safety. Lock yourselves up. And Michael is already there, obviously. We know he's stalking them, but not before LL Cool J in that fake-out shooting.
Another misdirection. Great
and again,
job.
Again, I love it that Arkin is trying to do something as well.
Taking a playbook out of the Dr. Loomis approach to innocent people.
Dude is just a guidance counselor. He can't tell that it's not Michael
and
Myers.
And you know why that scene works? So it's a scene, there's a shape coming up the stairs, cut to Brennan grabbing the gun from Laurie, shooting wildly, cut back to the body coming up the stairs, putting up their arms because they're getting fired at and dropping dead.
No.
That scene works because the first image, the first image of the body coming up the stairs is Michael. That's not LL Cool J. No way. That's the guy playing the Michael Myers character, right, mask and all. And then it cuts back to being LL Cool J.
Now, LL Cool J, in a hilarious line at the end of the movie, goes, baby, that bullet just grazed me. After
yeah,
like,
right.
I'm going to write a romantic
seven
thriller.
Of them.
So if a bullet just grazed you, then how are you floored and knocked unconscious?
And covered in blood.
Right. So that makes no sense, no. But that's fine. It's awesome.
So, yes,
bad.
It turns out Brennan shot, and he thinks killed LL Cool J. Checking on the body, here comes Michael from behind him. Scalpel off the ground again, because you got to have one guy lifted off the ground with a knife or a sharp object per movie.
It's becoming a thing. It's scary, and it's sad because we've gotten to know Arkin a little bit.
Yeah.
Arkin is, you know, again, the kills in this movie are
impactful.
Not faceless.
And that's why I had such a problem with the kills in Halloween 2. Mm. If you turn him into just this psychotic killer,
hateable people die.
Right.
It's like a bloodlust thing for
exactly.
That its own sake.
Exactly.
And it's honestly, it's a little bit of the same in Halloween 1. So
sure.
It's like, sure, these kids are assholes. These kids are cocky. Let's end their cockiness.
The impact of it isn't felt as much because Halloween 1 started it. You know, he could have done whatever and it would have been ingenuity. But now that we've gotten to this point in 98... having a more focused Michael Myers is to the screenwriting and our audience members' benefit.
And yet, the fantasy girlfriend of young Alan in this movie, of course, he is the surrogate writer in all of us because he's giving all the poetry one-liners throughout this movie.
Right.
And she's just digging it. She's this, you know,
the
hottie of the class.
Yes.
And of course, she's in love with him. So this is total writer's fantasy there. I can see right through that, Kevin Williamson and company. but yes, we have connections to these people. And we have connection to guidance counselor, boyfriend Arkin there, because he's a good boyfriend. He's putting up with a lot,
yeah,
even though he might have miscalculated her level of
he's got
foreplay.
His faults. He's into some weird sex stuff.
Right. He's willing. No, let's just say he's willing to go with some weird sex.
Right.
Oh, you want true crime foreplay? That's not true.
And I'm Charlie Manson.
It is Halloween. So, okay, he's a little messed up.
Helter skelter, baby.
Boarding school guidance counselor. He'll
We've all been there.
Right. Take what he can get for foreplay. He just wants it to happen. Anyway.
So, Brennan's dead. Lori doesn't take time to grieve. She knows, I'll grieve later. This is my brother. He's coming to kill me. Take the kids. Get him in the car. Get him to safety.
Right.
Go find an axe.
Crazy in that whole flight. Because she gets the jump on Michael there for the first time with the fire extinguisher, which
yes.
is a little bit goofy in the way they cut that. I have a quibble with that sequence, but it's cool that she gets the jump on him for a change.
I wasn't even paying attention to that, honestly, because I was, when she got the axe and she's standing in the middle, she takes the electronic out of the gate. So she's locked in,
so
making
badass.
Sure he's locked in
gets
with her.
Gets the kids out. The car works, first of all.
Right.
Which is, I was like, you're reliving all your dumb mistakes from previous movies. Why would you even get
no,
a car
not this
here?
Time.
Just run. He's got peg legs. He can't follow. You have the same, let the kid, you can do the same thing with the gate without the car. Just run. No.
But she's not running away. She's just getting
hard
them to
can't
safety.
Run, so that makes
right.
some sense.
Right. Gets the axe, stands in the middle of this beautiful, gorgeous private school.
Michael's rusty.
Locked in.
Michael didn't disempower every car.
Michael! Oh, I had goosebumps. So the hunted has become the hunter, and let's fucking go.
One of the most satisfying buildups, the momentum of that, all that, you know, like you said, breaking the security. We've had a few instances at the security gate at this point. Having the kids go and her saving the kids.
This is one-on-one.
to a degree, but she's like, I can't save these kids unless I fight.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I could totally get away for another day.
Well, it's a combination of stuff. It's I need to protect my son. I need it's the Frankenstein soliloquy we have in that scene. I need to kill my monster.
Yeah. I have to deal with this once and for all. I grab an axe to do it. Ugh, I walk in the middle.
Score. Oh my God.
She's bringing an axe to a knife fight, Michael.
100%.
I love that. But she knows she's overmatched. That whole sequence where she goes, I mean, Michael's not stupid. He basically...
No, it's capable against capable.
Backpedals into his, where he's at his best in a fight. Because he's not great in a fight, necessarily. We know this through other movies. But he's great, like, being, doing what? Trapping people.
Yeah. Cat and mouse.
Cat and mouse.
Except now we have two cats.
So he's hanging from the ceiling in a crazy shot where her axe is basically...
Oh, my God. There's so many iconic scenes.
They both get hit in the shoulder.
The same. I think it's the same shoulder as she got stabbed in Halloween 1, too.
So she gets stabbed the same way. He gets stabbed in the shoulder.
He gets an axe to the shoulder. She gets a knife. And now we have this banquet hall scene where she's running away after stabbing him with the axe. There's tables laid out, and she's rolling under table to table, looking for his footsteps.
It works.
We don't know where he is. Why can't we see his feet? Well, that's because he's walking on the fucking tables, knowing she's underneath.
Yeah, that works so well. That's like a Scream kind of sequence here. And, of course, she gets the jump on him when they get back upstairs, right? She flees from that sequence.
How about one more homage to Halloween 1 here?
She gets a knife. Stabbing him, he falls backwards.
Off a balcony, sprawled out underneath. And she knows, you ain't dead yet.
A perfectly aggravating... Now, she drops the knife, which bothers me.
Yeah.
Another knife. But she gets down there, and she's about to cut his head off, I gather.
Something, or at least stab him repeatedly more.
LL Cool J stops her in the nick of time.
Comes from the grave.
Now, that is aggravating, but it's perfectly aggravating for a horror movie.
And it sets up the last scene. Because every Laurie Strode Halloween thus far has ended with an ambulance ride. And we think that's where this one's going as well. We have all the setup. All the cops and EMTs are on scene. We're going to get Laurie. We're going to put her into safety. Michael Myers is finally dead until the next sequel. So let's put him in a body bag. No.
She goes full Loomis.
We're not repeating history this time.
She goes full Loomis.
She takes a gun and says, put him in the fucking van. I'm ending this shit. Gets Michael Myers in a body bag in the van, points a gun at everyone so she can only be the one in the van to commandeer it.
Grabs an axe as well.
And she's taken off. It's her and Michael because she knows this ain't ending this way. Michael's in the body bag and she's speeding down the road, looking in the rear view, waiting for the body bag to move, which it does.
Now, this is not a great plan. I forgive her that she doesn't have a great plan in that instance.
She's lost it. She's lost it.
So it's fine that it's not a great plan. There's other movies where plans like this have succeeded. Now, she gets kind of lucky. Number one, it's pretty cool that once he's rising from a body bag, that is cool.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And it's expected, too. It's not an unexpected trope.
She slams on the brakes to get him out of the car. Crazy. You know, again, it's just innovative in a quick way. Then she's just like, fuck it.
I'll do in this movie what Loomis did in Halloween 2. I'll take me out if it means taking you out.
And she just drives that car after spinning its wheels on the ground there off the freaking cliff. But this is where she gets lucky. He gets pinned.
Yes.
And she, of course, does not get hurt. Sure. She gets bruised.
She's beat up, but yeah, she should have been hurt more, of course.
They both should have been. And then who wins that healing process the fastest? He does, of course. He would have killed her there, so that's not smart. But it's awesome.
Yes. So we have Michael Myers, after 20 years and 3 movies worth of terror,
yes,
pinned against between this metal beam and the van. Laurie with the axe, limping to him. Michael looks up, and in a moment of weakness, for the first time showing any touch of humanity in the 3 Laurie Strode films.
I love how he reaches for his mask to make sure my mask is still
on. That's
a
good point, yeah.
Isn't that cool? And
reaches out for Laurie's hand.
We're
brother and sister.
Right.
Don't forget this.
You think he's playing possum a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
He's smart enough to know that.
He's appealing to her humanity.
and she cries.
Yeah.
And it works.
And it's such a, and she's pulling it off too. Totally believable,
and
by
for
the
this
way.
Kind of movie where you're used to yelling at the screen, this is when you're yelling at the screen. Yeah, I just watched this with
friends. What the fuck
are you doing? Don't do it. Don't touch him. He's going to grab you and take the axe. And
her hand never really touches. It's a close up of their hands. He reaches out. She reaches out, but she doesn't let him touch her at all.
On instant replay, they might have touched.
For a fraction of a second, yeah.
But they don't.
But there's no hand holding. There's no grasping. And she comes to her senses. That look of empathy and sadness
because she
becomes resolve and anger.
What Loomis had said, the eyes. You get a close-up of his eyes.
Oh, my God. I'm tingling.
His
yes.
lifeless, animalistic devil's eyes. She realizes that he's not reaching for a connection with her, that he's just still trying to get
her. He's trying to kill her. And she says, this is it, man. We're done. Reaches back, reels back that axe, yells, puts one big hack,
look.
And we see Michael Myers' head tumble off his body into screen,
Aragorn,
facing the camera.
Aragorn, Ned Stark, Jaime Lannister could not have done better with an axe, with a sword, just in one fell swoop. What a great shot.
I will say, were this to be the final image of the Halloween franchise, what a perfect ending.
His head tumbles, faces the camera for the finish of the film.
And we go out.
It's just her
with
seething,
the music.
Heavy breathing. You focus on her face. That she turned into the killer, forced into it becoming a killer of this whole thing, but she had to fight him back.
And the family traits, the shared family traits, which I hinted on, where Michael won't be stopped. He's only going to kill people that are trying to be obstacles in his way to his goal. She needs to complete her goal as well. She's just as mad and just as driven to end her goal as well. That's why she does the crazy thing of driving off a cliff. That's why she pulls a gun out on all the EMTs and cops and says, fuck you, I'm taking this guy. There's so many good aspects of this movie and this screenwriting. And to me, it should be more of a horror classic.
It is a horror classic. It just hasn't gotten its... you know, cult following yet. Maybe we could start that.
Maybe it's too early. Yeah, maybe 20 years is just about the right time. Sure, but if you are a fan of Halloween, if you plan on seeing the remake, the David Gordon Green remake in a couple weeks, you have to appreciate what was done in this movie.
Right. So we end with Creed's What's This Life For, Michael? I don't love that in the credits.
It's 1998. It's proper.
1998. And I think I'm just mad at my former younger self, because when I was 12, I listened to a Creed there for a spell. We all did, didn't we?
I think I still listen to them. What do you mean? Funny story. This has nothing to do with Halloween.
Oh, no.
Scott Stapp lost his mind for a little bit there in the mid-2000s. There's an ABC 2020 report about how he was like deteriorating mentally, and they have a voice recording of him calling his son's school and being like, I've discovered that my son is the head of ISIS. Call me back.
What?
I swear, that's it. That's it.
It had to be a gag of him just wanting to get in touch with his son.
It wasn't. It was just him losing it. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Well, he related to Laurie Strode's PTSD at the beginning of this movie, but his was just from rocking too hard?
Could be, yeah.
He related, so he gave them the rights.
He got taken too high, is what it was.
Too high.
Yeah. Anyway.
Why did we end this?
I'm going to cut that.
Oh, it's good.
So... where does this leave us as terms of the Laurie Strode storyline? Where does this fit in the Halloween universe? Again, Laurie Strode's going to make one more appearance.
Yeah.
It's whether or not you want to believe it's part of this continuity, that's up for you. I personally choose to not. I think this is too perfect of an ending.
Right. And this is another alternate storyline based on where we're going to be with 2018.
Of course.
But it's a cool one, and it's a cool path to go
great
down.
Great movie. What a great horror movie. What a great entry into this franchise.
Yes, it's very good. Very
satisfying. This is supposed to be it. 1998, we saw this. We saw Michael Myers' head get chopped off, and it's the whole reason Jamie Lee Curtis went into making this movie. She said at the outset, I am killing this guy. And she finds out later on, if you watch the documentary, that it turns out that there was a contractual obligation that Michael Myers can never actually be killed. So it was agreed to at the time that now he wouldn't die. It would be only her that believes he was dead. And that's how they got out of it, which I think was a mistake. But regardless.
We're going to get there. We're going to try to handle these movies from here on out with a little more momentum. 2 per. We keep saying this. It has to be. We're in trouble if we don't, because we only got a couple weeks left before 2018's Halloween comes out, Michael. So we're going to have to do something.
Yeah, that's not happening. We're too long-winded. Hopefully, yes. We would like to get the two.
These are the good movies.
These are.
They're great ones.
And that's why it took so long. And H2O specifically and especially, we both found a lot of value in. So we wanted to be as particular about it as we could.
You know, the return of Michael Myers has a lot of value as well, but it's of the awesomely bad variety. I just watched it last night. I enjoyed that watch. I never thought I would.
Four isn't terrible. 5, 6 Resurrection is a steep decline, even though 6 might be my personal favorite. And then the two zombie ones, if we don't handle the two zombie ones quickly, we need to stop podcasting.
Right. Yeah, I remember not liking those all that much.
You are not alone.
So, all right, so we're gonna charge ahead, force ourselves to do it in 2 to get some momentum for this rewatch here. But man, we are having a blast with this.
This is awesome. And listen, guys, our hope with this one, especially because we did find this one, the H2O, so appealing. If you're a Michael Myers fan, please go back and watch this, rewatch it. We hope we ignited that fire for you to kind of relate to different things. Maybe we brought up some stuff that you had forgotten about, or maybe some stuff you've never heard before, such as the Easter eggs tie-ins with classic horror movies and classic horror cinema, as well as Halloween 1, the original in 1978. But we want to know what your thoughts are on this movie and all of the MMO Does Halloween series that we are currently working through. If you have not seen the artwork, Lauren Leslie Stewart, studio, want to give a shout out to her. We have a special artwork done for Mike and Oscar for the Halloween franchise. This recap we're doing, it's hilariously awesome.
It's awesome. My face is behind the mask. Yes. I'm doing my Nick Castle.
You are Michael Myers.
It's very good.
I figured since you're Mrs. Claus in our Christmas one, I would take the female role for this particular one.
So. And it works. Yeah. It works so well.
And just a shout out there. Great job. Great job by Ryan Alteri. Great job by you, Mike, with your research for this one. Great job for me for being a psychotic, horror-obsessed person, for knowing this shit without having to see it again, probably, even though I did.
A lot of pats on the back for this series so far. I mean, you're listening to it like crazy, so I'm so surprised. So I'm a little surprised, honestly. I didn't know there would be this amount of fervor, but...
'Tis the season. October. Yeah. November 1st, we'll get back into the more serious stuff. But yeah, we are doing Oscar stuff along the way. We just did A Star Is Born last week.
Yep.
You will be hearing our take, our Oscar Sprint profile of First Man later this week. We have a new set of Oscar trailers coming up in the near future as well.
A lot of new trailers have come out, too. So we'll bundle those together. You like those episodes so far. They're like the next big preview that we'll have for award season. So
it's going to be one of the last ones, too. We're coming at the end of 2018.
I already have like 20 trailers in there, so it's going to be substantial. Excuse me.
So whatever you want to give us a comment on, we want to hear from you. Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, MikeMikeAndOscar.com at gmail.com, and on Reddit. Reality sucks. Keep watching movies and trying to kill your sister, I guess, with us.
Oh my God.
At least for this storyline.
You relate to the wrong characters in your shtick. You're insane. But we do want to say some words of wisdom.
Yes, go ahead, Michael. Final words of wisdom here.
Fight your monsters like a Laurie Strode does, but write movies the way a Kevin Williamson does.
Totally.
And act in movies the way a Michelle Williams always has. She was great in this film.
This cast was awesome.
And you can listen to Creed ironically again. You have our permission? No.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time. Halloween 4 and 5 is next up, as well as our Oscar Sprint profile for First Man. And don't forget, we have a special episode for the All the Horror Feed podcast that will be coming out tomorrow.
Listen to that whole feed.
Wednesday the 10th. It's a kind of a unique take. It goes in line with what we're doing with these Halloween episodes. It's kind of interesting, kind of dark, kind of funny. We're hoping it's going to be a big hit, and you'll love it.
More wisdom, all the horror.
There you go.
See ya.